The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So welcome everybody for this retreat, and I think we'll all enjoy it. It's nice to see you all, old friends, new friends, and all of us who live here. So, we're going to study the Lotus Sutra this week. And one may ask, why the Lotus Sutra? Well, when I was a young monk, I read the Lotus Sutra, and I bounced right off it. I thought, huh? You know, I didn't get it at all. Well, then later on, I kept hearing about it. You know, Dogen thought it was wonderful. There's whole schools of Buddhism devoted to it. I thought, well, I must be missing something. So, so widely venerated in the East, and actually beginning to be more in this country too, although it is a bit slow to take off over here. So I thought, I better study it. And if you want to study something, there's nothing like having to teach it to get you to do that, because you have to read it, you have to study it. So I've been doing that. So here we are. Well, we don't tend to study the Lotus Sutra as much as some of our other scriptures, but it's right in our tradition, actually, apart from the fact that Dogen liked it, he loved it. A number of our scriptures are taken from it. There's the scripture of Avalokiteshvara, which we recite quite a lot. I'm sure most of you are familiar with that. There's the scripture on the immeasurable life of the Tathagata, which we also recite quite often for Reverend Master Jiyu, for various memorials and that kind of thing. There's the scripture on the conduct that eases the way, which we recite at least once a year. The scripture on the marvelous spiritual powers of the Tathagata, the parable of the herbs, all of these are from the Lotus Sutra, and these are all things that we actually chant now and then. As I said, great Master Dogen loved the Lotus Sutra, deeply venerated it, quoted from it all the time. The Shobogenzo is full of things from that sutra, and you wouldn't necessarily know until you read it. You think, oh, that's familiar, you know. He wrote whole chapters about it, based on it. He doesn't always say so, but when he quotes something the Buddha said, it's very often the Lotus Sutra. And why did he like it so much? Well, Dogen was ordained in the Tendai tradition, and that's one of those schools that venerate it, so he was raised with it, as it were. But he never put it behind. You know, he went to the Chan school, he abandoned Tendai, but he still loved the Lotus Sutra, still quoted from it, just really loved it. And he was a really, you know, a person of vast intellect and deep philosophy. And it's not a philosophical work, really. But he never felt he'd gone beyond it, you know. And all his teachings influenced him, as you will see as we go on. He even put it into the names of the 10 Buddhas. We know, like, the completely pure Buddha, Vairochana Buddha, Dharma itself, that we recite at meals and the like. He put in the great and excellent Dharma Lotus Sutra, you know, this Lotus Scripture. They've been reciting it for hundreds of years, and he bungs it in. So we recite it to this day. And as I said, it's interesting because it's not a philosophical work. It's not intellectual at all. It doesn't talk a lot about traditional doctrines of Buddhism. It doesn't go into details about the 12 steps of dependent origination and that kind of thing, although it mentions some of them. It's more a work of faith, written in faith, meant to inspire faith. And that's its great beauty, and I think that's why people love it. It's a work of faith. It opens the heart more than some others. You know, it's just different, actually, from a lot of the other things we read and recite. Yeah, they all open the heart. They're all works of faith. But there's something about the Lotus Sutra. It's just a little different. Well, I've been reading some books and articles about the Lotus Sutra. I try not to read too many because that's deadly. But some of them are clearly written by people who love it and venerate it. and some aren't. And you can always tell the difference, because some people get kind of, is it a sort of, it claims this and that kind of, you know. And then people who really venerate it, they don't write like that at all. They sort of say, oh yes, this is this wonderful, you know, here's this. And it just has a very different flavor. So I've tried to stick more to the works of faith, about the work of faith, rather than reading too much erudite stuff. You know, if we can study something with the mind of faith, it opens up for us somehow, and we can think, well, what does this mean for me? How does it apply to my practice? Rather than think of it from some intellectual viewpoint. And that's what we're going to try and do. It can nourish us if we do that. We can use it to help us in our training. Otherwise, there's no point, really. It's just an intellectual exercise, you know. A critical or skeptical mind, we miss its teaching. So we're here because we want to study the Lotus Sutra with the mind of faith. Because our tradition, really, is a practice. Our practice is a practice of faith as much as anything. It's not just trying to get wisdom for myself. It's giving ourselves to the practice in faith, opening the heart in that way. It's not a scholarship tradition. Scholarship is fine. If we didn't have scholarship, we wouldn't even have the scriptures translated. But you've got to have that on the basis of faith. You know, you need that as your fundament. Because you can trip over things, you know. Sometimes you sort of think, what does this mean? This must be a problem here. And if you just sort of say, just take it in faith, you can say, well, I don't need to know. I didn't need to worry. You can take it in stride. And there's quite a bit to take in stride in the Lotus Sutra, because it's got challenges. And we'll talk about some of them. And if there's something that we can discuss during our discussions, if it's helpful, if it applies to our practice, we can maybe help each other figure out, what are they saying here? Why did they put this in? You know, see what we come up with. Well, to put the Lotus Sutra in context a little bit, I won't go on great length, but it was written in India, probably in three stages by different people, and you never know what these things are written, who these things are written by, who wrote the Scripture of Great Wisdom. We have no idea. We have no idea who wrote the Lotus Sutra. And it was probably at least three different people. Because it would seem like the first part was written about the year 50 in the Christian era, the next part maybe 50 years later, and the third part 50 years after that. So there's about a 100-year gap there. The third part about 150 Christian era. So this is quite a, you know, wide range. And it's a little patchy in some ways. You can feel there's a bit of, it doesn't hang together in quite the way that some things do. But it's got all sorts of things. It's got contradictions and, you know. But it's actually kind of nice. Well, actually, it was one of the first Mahayana scriptures that was ever written, because it was written about the time they first started writing scriptures down. They used to just transmit them orally up till then. And so I guess around about 50, the year 50, that's when they started writing the scriptures down. So it's one of the very first. And that thing is important, because it laid the groundwork for some of the Mahayana teachings. And I think it's one reason people venerate it, because there's things that we take for granted that are in there. And this is where a lot of them kind of maybe come from, you know. It's things that we now assume are part of our practice, but they started off in the Lotus Sutra quite often. Well, you might have read the Lotus Sutra, you might be reading it, or not. You don't have to read it, but I actually do recommend it. It's really good. It's quite readable. It's not completely impenetrable, and some things are really hard to read, but it's actually quite, it's a lot of repetition, but it flows along quite nicely. And it's full of stories and parables and things happening, and people coming to the Buddha and asking questions, and all kinds of stuff goes on. And we can't follow, you know, we can't cover half of that. Because, you know, there are people who'd devote their whole life to teaching the Lotus Sutra. As I said, there's whole schools of Buddhism devoted to the Lotus Sutra. We have a week, so we're not going to cover everything, you know. But it's really good. It's good. my purpose really is to encourage us to read it and to study it and not just bounce off. That's what I often think, you know, thinking about some kind of text to study, just to encourage us to read it and not be intimidated and not think, oh, that isn't really part of our tradition. But what can I actually, how can I derive benefit from this? How can it help me in my training? And that's what we like to do. How does this help us in our training? Otherwise, why bother? You know, it's not going to do us any good if it's just an intellectual exercise. There's a nice story from the Platform Sutra about a monk who comes to visit Great Master Hui Neng, the sixth ancestor, you know, the great legendary monk. And he comes to visit him and he bows, but he doesn't touch his forehead to the ground as he should do when bowing to somebody like this. And Hui Neng notices this and said, you're not bowing properly, because the guy's arrogant and proud, doesn't want to do a proper bow. And he says, I have read the Lotus Sutra over 3,000 times. And Hui Neng says, well, that's nice. What good has it done you? Clearly, you've not understood it because you're arrogant, you know. It's a nice story, actually. And the guy says, you're right, you know. I don't understand it. I have doubts about it. I don't really get it. Would you explain it to me? Which is actually really nice. He immediately says, yes, actually, I don't really understand it. And so what great Master Hui Neng says, well, I can't read, so I've never read it. But if you read it to me, I'll explain it to you. Which is actually quite impressive, you know, just off the cuff like this. So this monk starts to recite it. And after a few chapters, Hui Neng says, stop. I get it. There's a, you know, a point to this scripture. And he points it out. The meat of the scripture, the essential point, he says, you should have faith here and now that what a Buddha directly knows is right within your very own heart, i.e., we all have Buddha nature, we can all understand the truth for ourselves. And he says, all the parables in the sutra point just to this thing, that we have the truth within ourselves. That's it, you know. Well, there's a whole lot more to it than that, but this is the basic meat of the thing. And here's Hui Neng just pointing it up, just like that. And the monk is completely gobsmacked, and he has this great awakening, bursts into tears and says, yes, all this time I've been a complete idiot, and now I get it. And then Hui Neng proceeds to explain more to him, but since we haven't gone through it yet, I won't go into that. But here's Master Hui Neng just pointing out exactly what he needs to hear. It's a work of faith. It's not a thing of scholarship. Reciting it is fine. But the nice thing about this is the monk understands. He has this great understanding. And he says, should I stop reading the sutra? And Hui Neng says, no, read the sutra, you know, recite it. It's fine. It won't do you any harm. It'll be, you know, it's a good practice. So the monk from then on continues to recite the Lotus Sutra, but now he does it with understanding and with faith. And I think it's a really nice story because it points out that faith is the essential thing, and to allow it to open the heart and not just try and figure out, you know, something intellectually. It's not intellectual work at all. It doesn't really work for that. But it's, anyway, just I thought it was a nice story, so I thought I'd just mention it. Well, up in the common room in the guest house, you will see there's a very large book, The Art of the Lotus Sutra, which somebody gave me. And I've put it up there for you to look at, because it's got some lovely pictures in there. It was a really popular subject for illustrations because it's bursting with vivid stories. There's, well, the Buddha shining light from the center of his forehead or throughout all these Buddha lands and all the beings in those lands and Buddhas and Bodhisattvas coming from other lands, and there's a stupa springing up out of the earth, and the Buddha and this other Buddha, there's a Buddha in there, and the Buddha Shakyamuni sits there with him, and you know, and this Bodhisattva springing up out of the earth, all kinds of stuff, and there's all the parables, the burning house and all that. It's very vivid. And so this book is full of illustrations like this. So if you want to look at it, please do. That's why it's there. So some people, you know, really relate to pictures more than words. So whatever works. But I think it's a nice opportunity to look at it. So one last thing about Great Master Dogen. When he was very ill and dying, His monks persuaded him to go to Kyoto to look for a cure. Well, he didn't really want to go. He had a feeling it wasn't going to work. He probably had cancer, they think. But he goes. He says, okay, I'll go. You know, I'll try it. So he goes to Kyoto. Sure enough, he doesn't recover. He stays with a lay disciple who takes care of him until he died. And it's said that he named this house the Lotus Sutra Hermitage. Some people say that's apocryphal, but I still think it's a nice story. The Lotus Sutra Hermitage is kind of nice. And when he was in his last days, he would circumambulate. There was a pillar in his room, and he had the characters for Buddha, Dharma, Sangha on it. And he would walk around this pillar, reciting one of the chapters from the Lotus Sutra, the chapter on the marvelous spiritual powers of the Tathagata, which is one of the ones that we recite. This in his last days. He loved the Lotus Sutra right to his dying day. In one of his last poems, he says, "How delightful, mountain dwelling so solitary and tranquil. Because of this, I always read the Lotus Blossom Sutra. With wholehearted vigor under trees, what is there to love or to hate? How enviable, sound of evening rains in deep autumn." It's one of his last poems. So he loved it to his dying day. And maybe we'll love it too. So that's it. Just a little short introduction.